From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. There is a growing paradox in the field of higher education. Even as more and more students head to American colleges and universities to advance their education and economic prospects, there is dwindling faith in the quality of a four-year degree, especially given its high price tag. Meanwhile, a whole new model of learning is quickly gaining ground. Massive open online courses, or MOOCs, offer education to anybody with a solid internet connection, often for free. MOOCs are attracting massive amounts of students, investment capital, and plenty of accolades. Nicholas Carr is author of the book The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains, and a contributor to MIT Technology Review, where he wrote about whether MOOCs could actually overhaul higher ed. Nicholas Carr, great to have you back on Word of Mouth.
Thanks very much, Virginia.
The title of your article is The Crisis in Higher Ed. How would you define the crisis?
Well, there's a financial crisis and a quality crisis and a technology crisis, and they're all coming together. As most people with kids knows, it's very expensive now to send a child off to college. There are concerns, as you said, about the quality of the education they receive. And now with the rise of this new form of online education, MOOCs, there's an ability to provide classes over the internet to large numbers of people simultaneously, and a lot of very prestigious universities are climbing on board. And so this convergence of trends kind of brings a spotlight to higher education and its future, and whether the old traditional model of kids going off to classrooms for 4 years is going to be the model for the future.
It's not the first time Americans have glommed onto the promise of distance learning. You wrote about the explosion of the postal courses in the 1920s. How are they the same?
Well, it seems like every time there's a new communication technology, there's a lot of excitement about the possibility to democratize education and revolutionize colleges. And the most extravagant or extreme reaction up until now came with the spread of correspondence courses. And this started early in the last century, where people started signing up and taking classes by mail. But that by the 1920s, it was an incredible mania, and something like four times as many Americans were taking correspondence courses as were enrolled in universities. And what's interesting is if you look at the rhetoric and the promises surrounding correspondence courses, it's very, very similar to what we're hearing today. So on the one hand, people were excited that the kind of campus boundaries seemed to be dissolving, and anybody who had a mailbox could sign up for classes from very good universities. And also there was this sense that this would change the very nature of higher education, that it would be in some ways better than classroom education because a professor could tailor the lessons and tailor the assessments to each individual student. And that's both of those things are something we're hearing today about MOOCs.
That's something you heard from education officials and university presidents, you know, welcoming this revolution of MOOCs. What role are traditional universities playing in the development of these courses?
They're playing a lead role. This is a movement that's really being spearheaded by the top U.S. colleges and universities. It first kind of came to public awareness a year ago, when a couple of Stanford professors offered an online version of their computer science course, and something like 160,000 people around the world signed up. And since then, Harvard and MIT have joined together to launch what they call a MOOC platform called edX, and many other top universities, both big state universities like the University of Michigan and private colleges like Duke, are all now getting involved in this and offering at least a small set of their classes online. So it's important to say that the people who take these do not get credit at those universities. You still have to pay tuition and go there if you want to get credit. But they are at least experimenting with offering some of their classes online.
As you mentioned, the professors at Stanford, they actually started Udacity. EdX, you mentioned, all started by computer scientists. I'm wondering about the role here of how does data collection play into the growth and development of these MOOCs? Very computer scientific methodology.
Absolutely, and it's no coincidence that computer scientists are behind these efforts. Another company is called Coursera, which is also led by computer scientists. And there's a couple of reasons for that, I think. One is that in order to enroll thousands of students and shepherd them through a class simultaneously, you have to have a very sophisticated computing operation. It has to be able to expand to have thousands of people sign in, and it has to collect information about how they're all taking the class so that it can design customized programs for them. So, for instance, if you sign up for a math class through Udacity or one of the others, you're constantly not only watching a lecture, but you're constantly taking quizzes and examinations. And when you answer one of those, you get a personal response, a personal evaluation. So this is a computing intensive type of program, and you need cutting edge thinking along those lines. The other reason, frankly, is that a lot of the early classes are computer science or math or software programming classes, and those are pretty well ideally suited to be given through computers, because of course a lot of the lesson would be given through computers even if you were on campus. Mm-hmm. So there's one question is, you know, how broadly can this model expand when you think about social sciences and humanities? So far it's very much focused on technology and science and math.
We're speaking with Nicholas Carr about what's being heralded as the next revolution in higher ed. He wrote about the promise and some risks of massive open online courses or MOOCs for the MIT Technology Review. Well, that is a question. I mean, the idea is that you can completely tailor these educations to where students are based on the data they give you, create sort of individual tutoring plans. It brings up the old criticism that was made of the postal courses. Is participation or rigor more important? Is there enough data, Nicholas, to measure how online students do in comparison with traditional students in courses?
I would say there is not yet. One thing we know is that most of the students who sign up for MOOCs, and this was also true of correspondence classes, drop out fairly early in the class. So I mentioned that original computer science class had something like 160,000 students sign up. Most of those people drop out before the first class is even done or the first assignment submitted. And in the end, the average for MOOCs for people, you know, finishing the class is around 5 or 10%. That's still, however, a lot of people. And I think it's still too early to judge exactly how well the students are doing. And that's why universities are a little wary about actually giving credit for completing a class. Mm. Because you don't know if the student has cheated, you don't know what kind of help they're getting outside. There's still a gray area, but certainly some students who would otherwise be unable to take these classes are learning and seem to be mastering the material.
You mentioned that humanities is an area yet to be explored successfully and found some skeptics of distance education among humanities professors, one at Swarthmore and one at Wheaton. Any surprise here that the skeptics are in the humanities? I mean, is this kind of creating us or them within university structures?
To an extent, I think it is. And I should say, I think there are people in the humanities and social sciences, professors, who are excited about this trend. And there are some early, you know, classes on literature and other areas beginning to be offered this way. And on the other hand, there are people in the sciences and in math and so forth who are skeptical of the trend. So I think it crosses the boundaries. But I think the fear is among people, among professors, particularly in liberal arts institutions, is that if we push this too far too fast, it kind of tailors or customizes the whole educational process to courses of instruction that can be very cleanly codified, that can be taught through computers, that can be turned into software, and it ignores the open-ended kind of discussions and investigations and explorations that can characterize the best college classes, particularly those in humanities and social sciences, but also in the hard sciences.
Well, Nick Carr, thank you so much for joining us and running through that for us.
Thank you.
Nicholas Carr, contributing writer to the MIT Technology Review. He's also author of The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. His latest article for the review is called The Crisis in Higher Education, and we invite you to read it. Tell us whether MOOCs are the right way to challenge or overhaul traditional education, or will they go the way of the postal courses of yore? Share your thoughts on our Word of Mouth Facebook page.